Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
On this episode of Two Dudes, One Car, John and I sit down and talk about the cost of golf, public courses, and how expensive they are, especially those that are at the upper echelon. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of Two Dudes, One Car. Well, everybody, the boys are back. We're back in Indiana, where you never know what tomorrow may bring. We're in those months of the year. I think you've all seen John headed the golf course, expecting the 70s. Turns out it's in the 40s. Then I don't know. You go inside for a half hour, come out, and it may be 82. Welcome to Indiana. I hope everybody's doing well. Summertime is coming. We're getting enough rain that every course in this state better be as lush as possible. And I don't want to hear any damn excuses. John, how you doing?
Oh, doing wonderful, Steven.
Well, John, I thought we would talk about the cost of golf. Before we get into, you know, what's going on, the PGA Tour, caddy moves, you know, stuff like that, I did a little research. And I have the top five, what I think I've found the most expensive public courses in America.
Yeah.
How many of these do you think you know?
I know three, probably. I'm going to go with Shadow Creek, Vegas.
At $1,250, they are number one.
Yeah, I figured that. I would probably go with TPC Sawgrass around $800 or $900.
$900.
Yep. And I'd probably say Pebble.
At $675.
Yep.
Right behind them would be Kiawah Island Ocean Course at $650.
Ooh.
And the Wynn Golf Course in Vegas at $600.
Okay. I didn't know if Wynn would still be up there with Shadow Creek being that high. So that's interesting.
Now what do you think? What's your rate? Where do you top out? Or is it some things you just can't pass up?
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to take in. I mean, I probably would not pay face value for any of those five courses listed. Right? Especially the ones in Vegas. I'm going to try to get hooked up with my host at Caesars, see what they can do, comps or whatever. TPC Sawgrass, that'd be pretty memorable. But for $900, I probably wouldn't play it, you know. And then Pebble, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I might try to play that once or see if we can get a group deal and go play Spyglass too, because I actually heard Spyglass is a more scenic course than even what Pebble is.
Yeah, and I really like the Kiawah Island Ocean Course. I've always wanted to play that. That'd be a tough one. Do I want to pay $650 to play there?
No one wants to pay that. I mean,
well, but you know what I'm saying. If the opportunity arises for some reason, and you got a car ride down there, you know, whatever.
Yeah. But I guess I'm in the one. You know, no more than probably $250 a round is what I would be willing to pay. You know, some of those desert golf courses we played in Palm Springs were approaching the $200 range. And I didn't feel bad about paying that, especially for the amenities and what, you know, just a lot of the stuff was included that you'd pay out of pocket for at some of the other courses. So, you know, that's vacation money. So that spends a little easier, but Indiana, you know, if I'm paying over $100, it's gotta be the Brickyard. It's got to be, you know,
Dyes.
Dye's Walk. Yeah, Dye's and
not Dye's Walk.
Ross. Yeah, Ross Course, Dye's, or a really nice private club, you know. But I'd still wouldn't want to pay over 200, 250 on any of those courses.
Yeah, the other thing you think about, like you get up into your Erin Hills, Whistling Straits, you get up into some of those, and you're going to be paying a pretty penny to play those. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I looked at those, I looked at the list, and I was like, man. And I get it, those are premier courses, but at the same time, you look around at what your average public course is costing right now. And I know, you know, everybody falls back to, we had such a boom at COVID time and yada, yada, yada. But, I mean, there's got to be some kind of break for the people that just want to get out and play golf, don't you think? There's got to be something.
Yeah.
It's. I hate to say that. Well, at 2 o'clock in the middle of August, you can get on for. You know, you probably get a deal 2-3 o'clock. You know, some courses still do that, but some of these courses that you see on TV that you would really like to go play, my goodness, there, you better really want to play there.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to be spending over a couple hundred bucks. You know, you're going to probably be in that $200 to $300 cost for tee time.
Yeah.
And it's just, it is what it is. I mean, we've talked about trying to get group rates, you know, booking way in advance to help minimize those costs. But if you're going to go play any premier course, I think you just have to realize you're going to spend $200 minimum, you know.
Yeah, I definitely can see that, and part of me wants to go that now we've kind of normalized that. That you're like, oh, well, it's only $200. It's like we've both been to Big Cedar.
Yeah.
We've played the Tiger course. We've played the almost every course there, but do you think that course is worth that Payne's Valley? Do you think that's worth $200?
It's worth $200 if you have the right lodging on prem, right? And you don't have to drive, you don't have to leave. You actually stay at the cottages, but then you got to know that you're probably spending for like three nights, you're probably spending $500 a man on just on lodging to go stay there on prem. But if you're going to do it, that's the way to do it. And that's the only way I'd feel comfortable. I mean, I would like to go back, but I would only go back if we got a heck of a deal.
Yeah. And if you think back, I mean, it was pretty fresh when we went and played it.
Yeah.
And it was
a
190 replay rate then.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. So that's probably a 250 replay rate.
Yeah, that's the part that's bothering
probably
me.
Probably 400 on the regular tee sheet, 350 somewhere in there.
But do you feel like it's the course taking advantage of striking while the iron is hot, if you will, or do you think it's a little bit of gouging?
Well, I think there's obviously costs have increased overall with everything. Inflation hit everybody. I think the demand of golf now is at an all-time high. I don't ever remember a point in my life of 37 years of more people golfing than there are today. So with that, I think the courses know what they can get away with, or at least they're trying new things and increasing the pricing to accommodate the demand for it. So do I like it? No. Does it make sense? Yes.
Well, and then my follow-up to all that would be, fine, but the service and what you expect when you arrive there should also be on the come up.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to charge that, it better be a goddamn good experience, right?
Right. Well, you know what I'm saying. Like,
yeah, it has to. It has to go hand in hand.
It's gotten to where that, and now don't get me wrong, most of these courses aren't that way, but you get to some of your local public courses that have elevated their pricing, but you're also still paying $14 for a small bag of range balls, or you're also you're waiting on a cart, or there is no ranger, or there's
there's nothing else.
Greens
nothing
are spotty.
Yeah,
the bunkers haven't been raked since like 87 at some places, it seems like. I'm not saying that's true. Rain, weather, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of things that accompany that. Some people don't rake the bunkers, blah, blah, blah. But when you pay a certain rate, I think you have a certain anticipation.
Yeah. I think your expectations increase as the price increases.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. You're not going to roll up to Pebble and pay $675. There's not going to be many things out of place, when you go to somewhere like that.
Yep. But even if Prairie View last year was $120, right? And I'm like, man, that's not a $120 course.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You play it. You're like, oh, everything looks the exact same. The staff inside's not really that friendly. The cart boys that are washing your cart don't say hi to you or whatever. They just take your cart, and it's still everything's on you to do. So I did not play there unless it was like a company outing, scramble, right? I would go like those off days. We'd go to Trophy Club or Bear Slide where the pricing was still sub $80, and, great. I don't mind not having great service because I don't really need – you guys aren't doing anything for me. I'm here to – because it's a more cost-effective course, and I would say decent shape to good shape, and you're getting what you pay for.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that there, but I – just looking at that list, man, I was like, God dang.
Yeah.
You know, there's people paying it every day, though.
Every day, and T-sheets are booked.
And it's just going to keep happening. I'm not saying that, hey, we shouldn't go to any of these courses. That's not it. It's just kind of one of those things. It's eye-opening when you think about the actual cost, and then you think about, even locally, if you got people that want to start playing golf and they roll up and they're like, holy crap, I didn't know it was, $70 to play around the golf here.
I mean – I've asked some of my LaPorte buddies to come down and play Indy, right? They're like, cool. Like, how much is it? Like $40? I'm like, well, are you going to get two buckets of balls or what are you doing? Like, we're going to go play 18. It's bring 70, 80 bucks. Or, oh my goodness. Like, we can't afford that. I'm like, well, you guys are used to LaPorte County where you're not spending over $42 with a card on a weekend,
Right.
And then that gets you, that's an all day rate.
If you think about it, man, it really doesn't seem like it was that long ago that we were paying that at a lot of our local courses, the 42, maybe 50 60. At some places. Yeah, yeah, you may have been up in the 70s, depending on where you were, but for the most part, and granted, that was probably before 2020. I can't remember, 2021 didn't seem so aggressive because a lot of courses around here were getting open back up. So they were trying to get, butts in seats anyway, but nothing against any course, especially when you got courses that are on the come up that are doing all these renovations, that are doing all these different things, coming up with new ways to get memberships, adding simulators, you've got all these other costs, and
yeah,
they've got to pay for that some way. And I understand that. I get it. But man, if you were just some 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid that wanted to start playing golf or whatever. Woo.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I mean, when I was at in the men's club at the Fort, you know, we got a deal. We got $8 off our tee time on Saturday mornings for men's club events. And it was like, cool, I'm paying like $71. What a great deal, big whoop. But then, you know, the carts or the starter, most of the time were terrible. The pro shop acted like it was a hassle that you were there. You go out in the range, drives around, never does anything, just drives around the course, not policing anything. Pace of play was always over 4.5 hours to 5 hours. And if you played on the twilight rate, you couldn't get through. And then they bumped it up to over 100 last year. And it's like, yeah, I'm not going to play that course because literally conditions have not gotten any better and the staff hasn't gotten any better. So why would I go pay that extra $30 around out there to go get the same experience I used to get for 71?
Yeah, and it's kind of a shame because when I think of the Fort, and I'm going to be on the wrong side of this conversation real quick, but when I think of the Fort and when I've played it, when it's in, I mean, terrific shape.
Yep.
Such a good time. It's such a great place. And part of me is like, well, raising the rate ought to bring those conditions back because it's going to lessen the amount of abuse that that course takes.
Nope.
And that part I also understand from a golf course standpoint too is it's not that they're trying to be elitist, but they are trying to at some point they're trying to control also the amount of play they get, which is a weird thing to say.
Yeah, they got to find that happy medium, right? How to maximize profits while limiting the disturbance to the actual turf conditions,
right?
And I don't know if there is a right answer to that. Probably somebody probably has figured that math out to make it make sense. But yeah, I mean, the Fort is, I mean, it one's that always comes to mind. It's a beautiful layout. It's unique to middle of the state, Indianapolis. You're up and down going through the woods. You know, you don't see those kind of hills anywhere in Indiana really until you get down to southern Indiana. And then by like July, it just gets beat to crap, you know, divot galore, starts to get brown out there. And it's like, man, if you guys could just turn this thing private and limit the amount of play, this place would be a dreamland.
Yeah, because it is a fantastic layout, honestly. I mean, I know a lot of people knock it, but I think they knock it because of the other things you mentioned, whether it's the guys in the clubhouse, sometimes it seemed like you're putting them off for you to be there, and the just the overall condition. It just gets a ton of play. But it's one of those courses that everybody likes. A lot of people like to go play it, and we've got several courses around that are like that. But there's also several courses that get a lot of play that are in really good shape.
Yeah,
so it can be done. We all know that
it's possible. For sure.
Now, John, I don't know how much LPGA you watch, but did you catch any of the Chevron Championship? I think that would be the first major of the year for the women.
That'd be a negative.
So let me set the tone for you. I don't know if you've ever seen this before, but they put a big sign that's at the back of the green on the 18th.
Okay.
And a lot of the players hit right at that sign at the grandstand so that their ball bounces back towards the green. So it gives you the ability to go long. And then where that's perched at, there's a slant that the ground rolls down and then it kind of goes back up a little bit to the green. So if you hit that sign and your ball does not roll back, you get to drop. Well, you can't drop because it rolls down the hill and you got to place it. So you set yourself up to have a nice fluffy lie, especially if you're, you know, if it's on the line, why not drive it into the sign, bounce it off there, you know?
Yep.
The weird thing about this was there was a lot of people doing it, but the, what's her name? Andrea Jatanagar was leading the event. When she's coming down, her group had been put on the clock for slow play by somebody else in the group, right?
Yep.
Just kind of setting the scene. Well, she, in fact, does go long. Now they're on the clock. And there's a great video now of her flubbing her chip like it goes 0.5 inches. And you can tell when she's standing over this chip that she's flustered. She's trying to hurry. She flubs that chip. Chip's up. All she needed to do to par was win. You know, makes a better chip the second time, misses the putt coming back, goes into like a five-woman playoff, ends up losing.
Yep.
So not only is it a bad deal, they've had that sign there for years, but back podcasts ago when we talked about different things that people could do as far as putting players on the clock, what do you think about that now? I mean, when you have somebody else in a group that maybe they're freaking six strokes back.
Yep.
And the leader's in that group, and now you've put that group on the clock and you've put additional, especially in a major, you've put additional pressure on a golfer that's trying to win a major championship, and then something like that happens. Do you think that, hey, that's the name of the game, that's the situation, or do you think that's undue pressure at that moment that she didn't do it, she didn't need it, but she got what she got?
I mean, I think it's just, it is what it is. Like, if you're playing slow, speed it up.
Well, I understand that. But by putting the entire group on the clock over one player's actions, I don't know. It's a tough one. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I'm trying to, you know, to keep the discussion going. If you're going to play that side, I'll play the other side. It just doesn't seem... Man,
yeah,
I don't
know. Unfortunate.
It doesn't sit right. It doesn't sit right. That's where it comes down to, I think, a point system or something like that. Yes, I do agree that they should come up and say, hey, you're playing slow. I get it. We need to step it up. You know.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you get to
go over and say something to her and say, hey, look, you guys are being put on the clock. I understand your position in this tournament. I'm just asking you to be cognizant of the situation that we were on the clock.
Yep.
I'm not trying to put any pressure on. I don't know if that makes any difference or not, but, and that may not be why the girl, she's a great player. I've watched LPGA whenever I can find it. I've never seen her make a mistake like that. And in that situation, it just seemed like when she was over that ball, she was really quick to hit it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like she knew the situation.
Yeah. I mean, you're playing a major in the LPGA. Got to show up. Got to be ready for all the punches, you know? I mean, it sucks. But, I mean, that's why you just have to have clearly defined rules, you know? And maybe they should time everybody. Like, hey, once you get to your ball, this is how much time you have. If you're in a penalty area, this is how much additional time you get, you know? There should be just clearly defined that way. It's not open to interpretation at that point. It should be clear as mud.
Yeah, I mean, I can agree with that. And the LPGA is definitely generally a lot faster than the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
I mean, on a regular basis, yeah. Just every tournament. Well, John, how important do you think a player caddy relationship is, and how important do you think the caddy is on an entirety of a player's career, or even on just a tournament by tournament basis?
Yeah, it probably is going to depend on the player, right? I'd say that's a tough one. I would say it's more important to some than it is others. I mean, if you just get a I mean, look at Tiger. He went through, you know, a handful of different caddies over the time. He still won a bunch of tournaments. Like, Scheffler's caddy is his only caddy that I've seen him with. But, I mean, I don't think Scheffler would need any specific caddy. to still go out there and win tournaments, but probably does bring some level of confidence or comfortability with knowing like, hey, this guy knows down to the inch how far I hit every shot and what shot shapes I can hit. You know, when I play with Jeremy on my playing lessons or when we played our match or whatever, like he doesn't even tell me a club. He just hands me what club I need to hit. I don't even have to think about distance, right? He just, here you go. Here's your club. And I go, cool. Just walk up and hit that thing, you know? So that's a good feeling. And it's probably to that times 10 times degree with a pro caddy. Cause they're getting, I mean, they step everything off ahead of time. They know the greens, they know the slopes, and then know their guy obviously really well. So I would say for some, it really helps out for the just pure athletes. I don't think it matters as much because I think they'd still figure out a way to win regardless of who's on the bag.
Well, I'll say this. Scotty Scheffler never sniffed the winner's circle until Ted Scott got on his bag. Scotty was a hell of a collegiate athlete. He's a great golfer. We all know that. But I think that relationship has helped him along, regardless of what it is that they conversate about or how they react to one another. Another great story is as far as what the caddy means is when Steve Williams got on the bag for Adam Scott and he was in that playoff in basically in the dark in the Masters on the 10th green. You know, basically the story goes that Adam was having trouble seeing it. And Stevie said, hey, this breaks a lot more than you think it does. And he was like, well, I only saw it a ball out. And Stevie said, no, it's two cups out. Trust me. And he said, okay, hits that putt and wins it.
Yeah.
So I bring this up because we had the recent Joe Greiner, who's childhood friends with Max Homa, leaves Max Homa, gets on JT's bag. And here comes JT storming along, wins the RBC. Now announced, what it might have been today or yesterday, that Colin Morikawa has now put Joe Greiner in his bag and got rid of his longtime caddy. So I think it's interesting the way these guys move around, and it does seem like, for lack of a better phrase, that some of these guys are golfer whisperers. That they just, you know, it maybe it's how they, because I know me and you would love it if you had a caddy, if we had a caddy all the time. We said, hey, I'm going to be playing Sagamore this week. You know, get my yardages, get my clubs ready. I'll be at the course. Yeah. You know what I mean? You got all your balls, your tees are ready.
Make sure your cocktails in the cart are ready for me to go.
But you got to think of that, how their whole lives, that's all they have for the most part. So the caddy goes up the course, the caddy walks off all the stuff like you were talking, has everything ready. It's all set up. He knows you, he knows what you want.
Yep.
And he has it all set up, and you know, you just trust it.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, no, this, you need to hit this. This is the yardage. Oh, okay. All right. And they hit it, and a lot of times they're right. And then you see, I forget what player it was, but his caddy gave him the wrong club and he hit it over the green.
Yep.
And he kind of looks back at, and they laughed at all.
Yeah.
You know, they laughed it off when you have that kind of relationship. But I think it's an interesting dynamic when you think about that you're with this person more than your family for the most part through an entire season. You're with them day in and day out for, you know, at least 4 or 5 days straight at the course.
Yeah.
You know, I just.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time those guys are getting in on, you know, a Tuesday. So they're really spending Sunday night at home potentially, or just 2 days a week, you know?
I mean, the caddy's life's even worse. The caddy's pretty much just getting done Sunday, and he may be flying out, depending if it's a major. I would assume those guys are landing there Monday night on the ground on Tuesday.
What they do is they put the flag in on 18 after the final round on the previous weekend, and then they fly out and they're going to go walk the course on Monday or Tuesday, you know?
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. I think there's a lot more to those, that relationship. I understand with Tiger. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever know, despite the little stuff you hear from Stevie Williams, but you really never know in that time frame how much talking or confidence that, or anything that Tiger, you know, built any kind of relationship. You know, he just kind of did his own thing. And, you know, there are a few of those guys out there, but there's not a lot, that's for sure. They're all using every available asset they can anymore, and which obviously seems to be working.
Yeah, I mean, it would be awesome. I mean, I got excited when Jeremy said, you know, we were talking about our match. I go, I'm still playing kind of bad. And he goes, don't worry, I'll have the Nooners ready for you. You know, confidence is already up.
Setting the standard.
Setting the standard early. So, I mean, for us, I think it would be awesome to have a caddy all the time. But one, it's not feasible because there's a monetary value. No one's going to do that for free. And I don't make enough money off my $5.55 bets that it'll help pay for anything.
Yeah. And well, really it's one of those things though, you caddy a little bit for each other when you're riding together anyway, you know, and you're like, oh man, is that, what do you think I should hit here? You know, it's normally, you might want to go one club up or blah, blah, blah. You kind of have that, but not at the same level that we would love to have it.
But if you're playing, I mean, most of the two main events, you and your partner, you know, me and you were like, hey, you know, this 165, I think it's probably playing 170 today, you know, go up a club. And we do that well, or what do you see on this read? But if you're just playing a normal round, individual game, and not a two-man one best or whatever, you really don't get as much of it. You might ask the other guy, well, what'd you shoot there? What'd you hit? You know, just to try to get a quick feel. And that's about the extent of it, right?
Yeah, and I think we take a lot for granted as golfers, especially if you think about when you're in a scramble. You know, most of us know if you're going to go out first, whatever you got to hit to put a ball in play, put the ball in play. Yep. And you're also always dependent on a guy that, hey, you're flushing your irons, just get us on the green so that maybe we can take a more aggressive line.
Yep.
You know, and that first guy, the part I hate is when you're putting and you're scrambling, you're putting and everybody's trying to get a read. Don't you just wish the first guy would hit the damn thing straight and let's see what it does?
Yeah.
There's always that guy going, what do you see here? And I'm like, just aim right at the hole. Just aim right at the hole and let us see what the putt does.
Yep.
And then we all get the read instead of guessing about it. And you hit a line that we're not even sure of. And it gives us zero shit to go off of.
Yeah, it's definitely on the questionable ones. I mean, I like putting first in scrambles. I think it relieves a lot of the pressure of not having to make it. And I've normally put a more confident stroke on it because there's no pressure. But yeah, it's definitely different.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think it'd be fun. I know we've had a great time when we've had caddies before. I think it's pretty interesting, especially when you just kind of yuck it up and you got somebody that's got inside information. And if you're having even a mildly bad round or whatever, generally you get lost in that conversation from tee to green. And before you know it, you're playing a lot better because you're really not focusing on the crap you just did 40 yards back or whatever.
100% facts. I mean, I love not having to pick out a club. I love just, hit it. Here's your club, swing. I don't know what I'm hitting. You know, I don't look at it. It just frees you up.
Now, the other question I got for you, John, does a player from LIV Golf need to win a major this year to keep LIV more relevant?
No, not really, I don't think. I think it'll happen, you know, even if it's not this year, next year. I think it'll happen within the next 2 years.
Well, they had a pretty I forget what the ratings number were for the Mexico. They just had Joaquin won that, but the ratings are way down. And I don't know. We're always on this show. We're about more golf, the better golf. It doesn't matter. But I did. When I started thinking about that, I do think that that's a big component. Because in the last couple years, I mean, Liv's been right up there. And I mean, I think they had, what, three of the major winners or two of the major winners last year?
Yeah.
So you start thinking about that. And I think it does shine a light on them a little bit more.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. I mean, I think viewership in general on PGA tournaments is down. You know, so it doesn't surprise me that Liv's down. They're all kind of down. So it'd be, I don't know what will boost it. I don't think either Liv or PGA has figured out how to boost ratings to where people were checking in on Thursday around, Friday around, Saturday they're watching half of it, and then Sunday they're just glued. I mean, my dad and I used to just sit for, 6 hours on a Sunday, and we wouldn't get off the couch besides to go get something to eat or, use the restroom. So that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, I think that I don't know. I think Liv still, I would still say they're kind of in their infancy a little bit.
Yeah.
I think where it lies is somewhere in between what they're doing and more in the YouTube space, to be honest with you.
Yep.
I think PGA, and I think they see that. And obviously a lot of the Liv guys see that. If they did more of that, I think that's going to open a lot of younger eyes. I think some of the older generation, maybe not. Like we've said before, I enjoy that because I consume it when I want.
Yep. Yeah, you're not stuck to a certain window of time.
Yeah, you don't, if I'm getting ready to, if I want to watch something for a half hour before I go to sleep, I can pop that on and watch that or whatever. But I think that, I really think that's where the future of a lot of golf really does lie. I mean, I don't think we're ever going to get rid of the majors, nothing like that. I don't want people to think I'm some kind of whack job, but golf tournaments have their place. But I think viewership is down across the board. Regardless, I don't think anybody's really seeing huge numbers. You can't compare Sunday at Augusta or Sunday at any major to a regular event.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm not a YouTube golf fanatic, but I do love what, I mean, I'm a Phil fan, so I've been watching all his matches with Grant, and I think that's fun. Right. I watched the Creator Scramble Classic with the Liv guys. I thought that was cool. It's a half hour, 35 minute long video.
Oh, the duels. Yeah.
Yep. It was fun. It's not as serious. It's still competitive, but it's not as serious where, it's not real quiet. People are joking around with each other. And like seeing what Josh Allen change Phil's
rangefinder
from yards to meters, like, just that's pure gold, and you can see he was shocked and stunned that it happened to him.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, it'd be no different if that's how, if DJ went about doing that. Now he's a little bit different because just the way his personality is. But even with, put Cam Smith out there with somebody, something like that. I mean, I'd watch it every time.
Yeah. Yeah. But now, if you just mic up Justin's brother, then you'll get plenty of commentary.
Oh, Justin, I know. He's hilarious.
He's got a great personality.
Yeah. I would like to see him and Cam Smith on a team against Phil and Grant or something like that, something along that line. And I know Phil listens to the show. So Phil, I think if you want to do something really cool, what you should do is also have two caddies play you guys, or have a player and a caddy play You know, because you want to talk about some guys that know how to talk shit. It's the caddies.
Yeah.
They don't take a lot of crap. And most of them are sticks, dude. Most of them are really good golfers.
Yeah. You can ask Anthony Rose how he liked his caddy, bet.
Well, John, that's really what I wanted to touch on today. I don't know if you have anything else that you'd like to talk about. We do have an upcoming interview with Donnie Dotson with Cary Golf coming soon. One of their guys just won the PGA Professional Championship. So it'd be cool to have him on, discuss the way that their company works and what they do and what they offer. And anybody listening wants to get a jump on that, want to check that out. It's Cary.golf. It's pretty interesting. They help out golfers, and I'd be, you know, be wise to check that out if you're so inclined or your company is so inclined to jump in there. I think that's also awesome. But John, you got anything else?
Club Pro guy's back. For everybody that didn't know, he is back, and he's out of the cellar. So that's always good to see him coming back. And I'm looking forward to more posts and videos from him coming out. So,
and I'm hoping my little back situation heals up, because me and John have a little upcoming match May 18th at Purgatory. Correct.
Rock Hollow, I thought.
No, I'm talking about me, you, Ty, and Tony. Are we still playing Purgatory on the 18th?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yep.
Ooh. Forgot about that. Yep. So we'll be on the course together for that. And then, we'll have an upcoming match at Rock Hollow. Date to be determined, I think. I don't know if our man, Mr. Matt Blair, has jumped in the chat to let us know his availability. We'll try to even that series up on whatever day, hopefully later when we get out of the showers that we've got coming in.
I didn't even play choose up today because it was supposed to. I looked at the forecast, like 80% chance of rain, and I'm looking outside right now and it's sunny and beautiful.
Yeah, I'm hoping a lot of this pushes, because I'm supposed to play Rock Hollow on Sunday, Hawthorns on Monday.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that holds out. And then I'm supposed to play Twin Lakes on Wednesday. Mm. And then Sagamore that following Monday.
Yeah, that'll be a tester for the old back, the sciatica.
Not even that. It's right up in the middle of the back. Whatever I did, we're at Macklemore. I think I'm going to blame that hotel. Hotel was great. Don't get me wrong. Bring your own pillow. They had those feather pillows, and I don't know what I did, but man, it got right down and just below the shoulder blade area, right there in the middle. I mean, can ask Justin McCran's making crayons. When I played at Purgatory, man, if I laid back on that seat, I was almost in tears. It was just,
it's tough.
Definitely hurt. So I've been going to the chiropractor, stretching out, doing all the stuff, and hopefully we'll get it worked out.
Yep.
But as always, everybody, we appreciate listening. This is going to go out pretty much immediately. Because we are behind on publishing our podcast this week. But appreciate everybody listening. Like, follow, subscribe. Again, any listeners, North Myrtle Beach area near the Barefoot Resort, I'm going to be there in June. It's posted on our Facebook page, on our Instagram. I'd like to get three guys to join me to try to play the die course there at the Barefoot Resort. Or ladies, whatever. I'm open to playing with whoever. Reach out. Let's do it. Other than that, John.
Yeah.
You have a good evening. It was nice talking to you, buddy.
You too, man.
Talk to you later.